You're listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America.
Welcome back to another episode of The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sports, sneakers, and entertainment industries. I'm your co-host, Mohammeda El-Muhajir, along with...
Hey, everybody. It's Nikita Newell Hall back for another exciting episode.
Okay, Nikita. So today we're talking about like not an experience with not one particular person, even though the title we mentioned Damon Dash, but you guys will understand as we go through like why it's not just about him. So we're kind of talking about this idea of the role that race plays into executives and management of high level artists and athletes. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and actors, entertainers, yeah.
Entertainers, athletes, you know, when you have a superstar, Black actor, entertainer, and you have a management or an executive that is responsible for them, what is the role that race plays? And I know people can say, oh my God, you know, people talk about race all the time, but I think after this episode, we'd love to get your feedback just to hear, you know, hear us out, guys. But we're going to start off with Damon Dash, right? I think in modern times, in like super current, you know, hip hop world, hip hop industry, music industry, you know, there's a lot of, you know, discussion about Jay-Z and Damon Dash and Rockefeller and that split and all the controversy that went behind, you know, their split. And I see a lot of interviews, not just with Jay-Z, not just with Damon, with other people who were involved, where people always at the interview was like, what really happened? So we're gonna like kind of weigh in what we speculate may have happened with them, similar to what may have happened with a lot of superstar entertainers and athletes, yeah?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think on our podcast, we are always trying to address topics that are going to be interesting to our audience, but that are also that water cooler talk, right? Things that are on the minds and the hearts of people based on what we see happening, particularly in the media and social media landscape. And this is a topic that has, you know, come up and it kept coming up. And so it made us ask this question, right? This whole episode is about questioning. People can make up their own minds as to what they think happened or what they think the contributing factors to some of these decisions and some of these splits are. I think we're here just to raise the conversation and to give our point of view. And I think, you know, having worked with both of them, Jay-Z and Damon Dash, in our former careers, it was a really genuine friendship. I mean, based on what I saw with my own eyes. And so when I heard about the split, it was very interesting to me, even though their personality types were very different. In my interactions, Dame was always the really more loud, more vocal one, the one that, you know, I know on several occasions, I have definitely gotten into him and with him and rolled my
eyes. Tell us. Okay, this is what I wanted to say. Tell me about anything that came to mind of your interaction with Damon.
Well, I mean, I think we used to fight because, you know, when I was working in the shoe industry, he, you know, had this thing where he wanted these all white sneakers and they would only wear them one time. And so that meant they needed a plethora of them, right? 20, 30 pairs at a time. And I was trying to explain, like, that's just not how business works. Like, yeah, this is a mutually beneficial relationship where we're getting something out of it because you're rocking the brand. You're getting something out of it. You're getting it for free. You're having this prestigious relationship. Well, that's great. But this is a business and I do have a budget and you're not the only celebrity I'm working with. Everybody wants these. So I can give you this many and then it would just be this fight. So, and I always wondered like, now that you have Rockaware and you have product and you have celebrity relationships that you want to get your product on, I wonder if you have unlimited budget that you could just send 500 pairs of something to one person. Maybe you do. I don't know. But that's funny. Like through the years that often crossed my mind, but the issue was that was, and then we kind of came to a more pleasant place because I lost my mom and he lost his mom. And so I think at some point you know, we kind of put our weapons down and realized, okay, we both were just in a place, right? But in that, I could see like this person has some jerk qualities to them, right? Now, here's the thing. I also respected his business mind, because I do think that he was very convinced of his greatness and the greatness of the artists that they work with and the brands that they could have and how far they could go and what they could contribute by having and owning their own stuff. And so there was a part of me that truly admired that sort of business mind that I was exposed to, right? Mm-hmm. And so when it came down to talking about that split and what might have caused it, I mean, I think you're right in raising the question, was race a factor? Meaning this, yeah, you have a person who's opinionated, who's loud, who's boisterous, who's arrogant, who's all these things, but also great business mind. And at some point, does a person of another race get in their ear of the artist to say, hey, do you need this guy? I mean, Irv Gotti made that point, right?
Right. Before we really get to the split, I mean, you spoke about like what your experience was like with him. And I had one sort of major experience with him. You know, again, I was in sneakers. You know, usually it would be like some assistant who might call me, you know, or Carlene, who was Jay's assistant at the time. But I had this kind of like, okay, you know how like when a president is in his last term in office, the last few weeks of office, he like does all these like pardons. You know, he'll like pardon.
Okay,
hear me out. Hear me out. He'll okay, be like okay. pardoning prisoners and doing all this stuff, right? So literally my last month or a couple of weeks at Nike, I kind of like pushed through these projects. Like one of the projects was, we spoke on an earlier episode, one of the projects was Diddy running the marathon. Okay, now that's
something,
right? Now I pushed that through in my last couple of weeks of the brand, working at the brand, just because I was like, this needs to go through. Now this other project that I pushed through, probably I feel like my last week, I don't know, was Damon Dash. And you know, he had his assistant kept saying, you know, please, can we have this meeting with Nike? You know, Damon has this idea about like CEOs being like, you know, role models. It's not just about like the rappers and the athletes. And, you know, he really wants to, you know, have this meeting and take his idea, right? Now, normally, you know, we'd be like, what? No, right? Just the answer would just be no. Like Damon Dash, you're not going to have your own sneaker. Like, who are we going to talk to about this, right? But like I said, I was on my last week presidential pardoning mode.
So yeah, why not? Let's talk.
So, and I'm like, before you come to this meeting, I'm going to tell you, it is not going to be an Air Force One. So if you're okay with that and you're open to like possibly, you know, partnering on another sneaker, I will set this meeting up. And they were like, no, you know, it's okay. Now this meeting is where I will forever have respect for Damon Dash. And it's like, it's a subtle thing. And when I explain it to you, you're gonna know what I'm talking about. Okay, so I set up this meeting, and I think in other episodes, we talked about the limited edition crew, Sam Siegel, who was the head of sales for like this limited edition product. And, you know, they were trying to get other product hot aside, you know, besides the Air Force One. So I'm like, well, hey, I think we have this guy. He's an executive. You know, he has an idea. Let's have a meeting. Let's talk to him. And they were like, okay, cool. No problem, Mohammeda. So Nikita, let's say the meeting was at 4 p.m. And I wasn't looking forward to this really, because I was like, God, this guy, I had never met him before. And I was like, oh, God.
Did you fly to Portland for this?
No, we were in New York.
Oh, you're in New York.
Yeah, we were in New York, right? Okay. So I was just like, oh God, I never met him. I, you know, dealt with a lot of people at Rockefeller, but I had not met him in person before, right? So it's like 4 p.m. The receptionist calls me exactly 4:00. Your guest is here. And I was already like, okay, all right, with the
I'll see you.
Yes. Okay. So we come into the conference room. And, you know, we all sit down, the sales guys, whatever, those product guys, you know.
How many people were in the room, would you say?
I would say, or from the Nike side, I would say two or three besides me.
Okay, got it.
Maybe two or three, something like that. Me, Damon, and I feel like his assistant, like he just came super low key like
oh,
that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Something like that. You know, it wasn't a big meeting. It wasn't in terms of numbers. Now, the respect that I got for him was this. So, you know, we sit down and he, you know, starts to talk about his idea. And for most of the meeting, he's directing his conversation to me. Right. Wow. Now, this is something
that never happens.
This is something that Black people never do. What they do, as soon as a white person enters the room, they immediately, you know, direct their attention to them, meaning like this girl can't do nothing. I mean, they were the decision makers in this particular case. He could have like really directed all of his attention to them and be very dismissive of me. But he did not do that. And I knew it was a conscious thing that he was doing because it normally doesn't happen. I was like, wow, it's a small thing, a very small thing that you could easily dismiss. But I knew it was a very, very big thing. Wouldn't you say? I mean, because you wouldn't.
Wow. Know. Hats off to him. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
No. That is, no, 100%. Like, important. And I think today, you know, for business executives and young business executives who are listening, I do think it's important that we acknowledge each other in these spaces and hold each other up and give each other the level of respect that we're due, as well as giving others that respect, right? But don't negate each other.
Yeah.
In preference for the other, right? So because I do think that happens. Whenever we have that opportunity, we should take it and honor each other in those spaces.
Yeah, because as soon as he left the meeting, they all turned to me anyway and was like, Muhammada, what do you think? So and right. If he hadn't done that, I mean, you could have easily come into a room with older white men at a huge brand and think the Black girl, you know, I don't need to, you know, pay her any attention. But I, in fact, was the decision maker.
Yeah, because they don't know. They have no clue.
Right. They are going to ask me anyway. So I have a lot of respect. And Damon, if you ever listen to this episode, I just want to tell you that, you know, you gained a lot of respect from me that day. And I definitely appreciated that. So that actually, you know, that. And by the way, they did the shoe. Sorry, I forgot to say that.
Shut the front door. Like, first of all, you have led with that. You're the queen of bearing the lead. Like, I swear on everything I love. Yes. You're the same person who, no. You're the same person who is like, well, I don't know what our season opener should be. I mean, I do have this one time I was a Beyonce and, wait, what? So anyway, about the whole shoe that Nike made for him.
They did a shoe, please. They did a shoe called the CEO, which I think he's still rocking that brand right now. With I see on his social media him and his like wife and kid, they are like still wearing the CEO brand. So we did the same kind of limited edition partnership that we were doing with other artists at the time.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was like the CEO. And I mean, like I said, I was on my presidential pardon. So I pushed.
You were like, come on.
I told them this was a good idea. And then I exited stage left.
Well, good on you. Good on you. And good on him. I mean, people don't realize what it takes to get an idea from your mind into the atmosphere, into people's hands. Yeah. I mean, that is no easy feat, especially with a large major brand. But I'm so glad you shared that story because I learned some new things today. I'm about to go look up the Nike CEO and see what it looked like.
Yeah, Nike Damon Dash, Nike shoe, I don't know what.
So I'm so glad you shared that because that's going to lend even more context to our discussion today about what do we think actually happened to sever that relationship. You know, it's funny with Dame Dash and Jay-Z, and I think we talked about this and just getting ready for this episode. I think it's like any relationship. If you've ever been in a relationship before, I don't think it's just one thing. I know when I got divorced, people were like, girl, I thought y'all were the best couple in the world. What happened? Mm-hmm. If I had a dollar for every time, I'm like, so many things. I mean, how much time do you have? I mean, really, I don't think it's really ever just one thing. I think there are times when it could be one major event. But when you have a longstanding partnership, I think it could be multiple things. But what got me to thinking that this was a really great topic that you raised, Mahamada, was when I saw Irv Gotti's famous mm-hmm. rant a couple weeks ago.
Infamous.
rant. About a lot of stuff, but mainly when he mentioned about Jay-Z and how that perhaps there was this kind of whisper in his ear that, hey, you're the talent, you know, do you really need to be splitting this money three ways? Mm-hmm. And wondering, like, what was the race and nationality of that voice, if that was the case? Could it be that, you know, that is a prime example? And we're asking the question, right? Is that a prime example of other people coming into a very lucrative relationship, business partner, manager, talent, label relationship, introducing this idea you don't need them? And then maybe taking a step further to introduce an idea, but these are the people that you do need, right? And is that, you know, what happened in that case? And how often does it happen with Black talent where people say to them that your own race of people are not qualified to manage your career at this level? Yeah, the people who brought you here is one thing, but you know, you can't go on to higher heights with those people. You need to change up and you need to get management that is either white or other, right? But definitely not Black. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I can think of a couple people that come to mind where I wonder what happened and if they felt the pressure of caving in and feeling like, you know, that their current management, whether it's their mom, their dad, or just, you know, friends that they came up with, were no longer qualified to take them further, right? And what's the difference between those people and people like a Will Smith or a Queen Latifah, you know, or a LeBron James, who said, no, I'm gonna dance with the one that brung me, right? And again, I love this conversation about if that is the case, right? So I think we want to take the position, like, if that is the case, if Black management and if Black CEOs of your brand cannot take you to the next level, who said? Who said? And what is the thing that they're telling you that is the reason that this person is now unqualified? You know, Muhammad, more than anything, what I normally hear is not so much about business acumen, but it's about attitude. It's about how they present. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean,
and I heard that, you know, Serena Williams, I mean, biggest week ever for tennis and for her announcing her retirement as she is. And I love the way she put it, evolving into her next phase of life, not retiring, but evolving. I thought that was just really brilliant. But looking at her dad, you know, and hearing, you know, about how his role in their career changed over time. Was it really because he wasn't astute enough to do bigger deals?
I mean, when we're talking about these kinds of characters, I think there's something is not just race, right? It's not just, you know, okay, were they Black, you know, and can a Black person do it or not? It's the type of Black person that they are that the power structure is not willing to negotiate with. And I think that is the difference, right? We see—
Right, but don't you think that that is race? Because another character type that is of a different race, sometimes that's accepted. It's like, oh, that person is just a pit bull, or that person is just eccentric, right?
No, but I mean, there's some like people who might have managers or you know, agents or something like that, who may be Black, who may be the same race as them, but they are like more subtle and, you know, more diplomatic in their behavior that is allowed. You see what I mean?
I'm saying that. No, I think we're saying the same thing.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. So there's some people that, like, you know, the, you know, corporate America, white power structure, white supremacy, whatever, they are not gonna be dealing with. You've seen this like famous famous videos of like Damon Dash at like Def Jam office screaming his lungs out. Now he probably was 100% right. Like, I don't think they probably should have been having a meeting talking about his artist without him. He probably, but like, they don't care how right you are. They like are not, they are not having being.
Muhammad, do you know how many agents we have seen, non-Black agents, screaming? I sat outside the outside the door of a lady. I didn't work for her, but I sat outside her door because the person I worked for was next to her. When I tell you this trick, threw stuff at her assistant,
yes,
cussed out, went and got a sandwich, didn't have no tomatoes on it, threw the sandwich at the person. I mean, ranting, raving, maniac. But because they made millions of dollars for the agency, people literally thought it was cute and funny.
Yeah. But no, that's not allowed for us. That, so I think that is like really the underlying topic of what we're talking about here. What that behavior is not allowed when it comes to Black executives, Black people, but definitely Black executives. The industry itself, whatever is that sports industry, whether it's music, entertainment, whatever, when you have this superstar talent, it could be a Michael Jackson, a Venus and Serena, Beyonce, you know, there's so many examples that we can look at. When you have this very opinionated Black father, manager, you know, very opinionated, very confident, speaks his mind, not playing by the rules, they are not having it. They don't care. They are not having it. They will wipe, they will get them out of the picture. And it's probably so subtle. Like I said, I bet you, you know, if we look at all those people and we ask them if they could pinpoint what exactly happened, why is such and such not your manager anymore, they, including Dame and Jay-Z, like they probably can't really figure out, because I think it's really subtle. And at the end of the day, it's that same idea that they're like, no, we are not dealing with no Black person who's going to be like not doing what we say in the way that we say it. So I think that, you know, has plays a role, especially when it comes to Richard Williams, girl.
Oh yeah, that was a good one.
He wasn't playing.
He's definitely marching to the beat of his own. Well, Joe Jackson, I mean, he was marching to the beat of his own drum. You know, I think, you know, I had heard, and I don't know, Vince Carter's mom, I think, was his manager at one point. And I heard she was a stickler, not in terms of ranting and raving, but just in terms of being a fierce negotiator, you know?
Well, I mean, I was at the brand at the time when they were negotiating the deal, and I think his mom, Vince Carter's mom, was some kind of like businesswoman, you know, and you know how the brands, you know what they're used to dealing with, you know, a lot of basketball players coming straight out the ghetto, straight out the hood, you know, they can just wave a check at some parent and like do whatever they want. But I think in this case, this was like, you know, a well-read person who wasn't like just kowtowing. And I would hear, you know, people complaining about her. Sorry if this is a lot of years ago anyway, but it's just right. Like, again, this opinionated, a confident Black person, which, okay, I'm gonna take this all the way back. If you go back to the plantation days, they had a term for this and they call it uppity niggas, right? And I mean, people literally get beat down for, you know, being too confident. Can you imagine? So I think so much of that culture is still a part of our society today. And people are like, who you think you are? No, you know.
Right. So. And I think too, for a lot of talent and athletes, I mean, listen, these are people who have worked their entire lives. This is the kind of discipline and dedication most of us will never know in terms of getting to the height of their actual careers. And you know, they get to a point where it's like they are ready to go to the next level and they are going to believe whatever is told to them. And if they get told that in order to go to that next level in your career or in your sport, you're going to have to surround yourself with someone else, 9 times out of 10, they will do it. I think it takes a very special person to realize the fact of the matter. I am the talent. I don't care who stands beside Beyonce. They're going to take the phone call. Mm-hmm. I could be Beyonce's manager at this point. because she's the one that they want. And so therefore, the reality of thinking that, okay, well, they're not going to do it. No, I'm not saying the system is not in place to keep you out. I've seen it myself.
Well, what where labels, where people would get in your ear. Did you ever hear what actually happened with, like, what is this, Matthew Knowles? Like, I never quite really heard
No, I didn't know if it was a situation, because I think there's so many possibilities, right? So one, you're dealing with several kinds of dynamics. Number one, this is a parent-child relationship. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you as a parent, it comes a time where your kid does not want you in their business. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you ain't got to be famous to figure that one out. Right. So that's one.
And then the mother and father dynamic, I know they got a divorce.
Right. And so again, you don't know where those loyalties lie. Mm-hmm. And then three, this concept that we're talking about, being vocal, having built your child's career from nothing to what it is today, and having a distinct point of view. And where their forces at work that said, well, you know what, we're not going to work with this kind of character. You need to get somebody else. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know. I mean, I think that's why we're having the conversation, just because it's interesting, you know, to consider what the possibilities are in some of these cases and to see what the parallels are.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, well, back.
But
back
I like, to- you know, one thing that we said, you know, when it does come down to it, you know, having people who are very opinionated or who are kind of crazy. I mean, you brought to the discussion, Ozzy Osbourne's former manager, who apparently, I don't know, because I don't follow Black Sabbath and what they was all about, but apparently was a ranting maniac, right? According to what I've read.
Don Arden, who was Sharon Osbourne's father, who had a management, I think he was an agent too. And he was just known to be like we said, we talked about agents before, working at an agency, but he was just wild. I think he was like, his tactics were like, he was using like mafia tactics with his artists, you know, probably messing around with money too, but he would just be wild and like, you know, and the point that we're making is it is 100% acceptable for executives, agents, managers, when they are not Black, to be, you know, loud, opinionated, wild. You know, it's amusing even at times. So, you know, he's just one example of someone. I'm sure people who know music history, you know, who may be familiar with Don Arden, you know, and his legacy, will know the kind of, manager agent that he was, kind of man that he was. And you can see that, it probably was far beyond any of these people that we're talking about. But this is behavior that is acceptable in the industry. But when it comes to like a Black person, especially a Black person who is managing a talent that the industry wants, I think it becomes a very different dynamic.
Yeah, 100%, you know? And I mean, I think like, we talk about the freedom to be who you are and accept eccentric personalities. Look, nowhere in this podcast are we suggesting that people go around acting a clown, cussing folks out, being disrespectful. That's not what it's about. But it is about being able to express yourself and being able to have a distinct point of view based on your expertise, right? Oftentimes people in these positions have come up the ranks with these artists and these athletes, and they know the business, right? I'm not talking about somebody who just got Pookie off the streets to be his manager and someone suggesting that you upgrade. No, you probably should, for real. But I'm talking about people, Muhammad, like we're talking about, who are bringing all of their passion, who are bringing their foresight, you know, they're bringing their ideas. Oftentimes, I would venture to say a lot of the ideas that some of these discarded managers have brought later probably were realized, right? But it's just that we're not going to do it with you. I mean, it brings me to this idea of the angry Black woman, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I was having that conversation with a friend who's in the middle of writing a book, a really brilliant friend. And this topic came up and, you know, I just was really put off because, you know, I feel like anger is an emotion. It's my point of view. just like being happy or being sad or any other emotion. And I think it's really inhumane to ask a person, a human, to utilize and pull the lever on some of their emotions, but don't pull them on others of their emotions when it is acceptable for other people to do it. Yeah. You know, Susan sitting in a board meeting, you know, again, you know, this podcast is about navigating corporate America as well. And this is a concept that comes up often in corporate America. You got Susan, you know, Bob says something in a board meeting. Susan gets mad. Oh, Bob, that's BS. Get out of here with that. That just makes me mad. Pisses me off when you say that, and just walks off. You know, it gets shrugged off. Oh, Susan, calm down, right? Mm-hmm. Keisha says to Bob, Bob, that's some BS. You get on my nerves when you say some mess like that. Get out of my face with that. Keisha walks off. He want to call the cops on her.
Right.
Angry Black woman, right? And, you know, I think for me, my solution to that is to put it back on Bob. Make Bob the problem. Don't make Keisha the problem. You know, if you suggest that, oh, Keisha's really angry, right? Then, you know what, Bob, is very oppressive of you to think that she should not have this emotion when something has specifically been done to her or in this environment, that she should suppress herself. Now, unless we say no emotions allowed for anybody, right? Then I'm fine with that. If this is an environment where we are all robots, nobody can express their emotion, I'm down for that. But the minute it's okay for someone to be upset, to be agitated, to be frustrated about what's happening in their environment, corporate environment, then to me, it's okay for everybody to be frustrated about it and for everybody to have a voice. Right. And when you take that away, then it is oppressive. And so I do think that some of these managers that we're talking about on the entertainment side who have been marginalized, some of it is because of how they've expressed their anger or their disappointment. And people get afraid, nervous. I did my afraid in air quotes, right. Nervous, upset. But because they have the power, they can just walk out the room calmly and say, well, we won't work with them. We refuse.
Yeah.
Right. And so yeah. I think that's the issue. It can be an issue.
That definitely can be an issue where, you know, we have to police our emotions to make other people, you know, feel comfortable, or they'll just be like, you know, calling the police on us. But I think another thing is this, you know, idea of Black people needing to know their place, right? And that meaning that our place is not to ever challenge, you know, the white power structure and other white people who are in power. Like, we are not supposed to do that. And the minute that we do, it triggers people, and then we become the enemy. And I think these different men and women that we talked about, that idea of knowing their place, they threw that out the window. And they were like, don't tell me about my place. I create my place and my space. And the power structure is like, no, they cannot deal with a Black person. I mean, just, I'm like, in modern society, people say like, oh my God, slavery was so long ago. But there are certain things like this that still exist today. This whole kind of, it's barely silent thing, like nobody would ever say it, but, you know, any Black person who, you know, decides their own destiny and, you know, that they're not going to be boxed in into this place that people tell them they should be, they shouldn't be speaking, you know, they shouldn't have emotions, like you said, you know, the people who say, no, I'm not accepting that, I think they'll be ostracized. And that's what I see happen. One of the things that I think happened with the Damon Dashes, with the Richard Williams, I don't know the details exactly of Matthew Knowles or of Joe Jackson. Some people, I mean, could be like, you know, megalomaniacs. I mean, something that could be part of it, but this,
right.
But this idea of knowing your place.
But there are others. Okay, listen. All right, listen. Let me interject, because they could be, right? But again, unless you tell me that in business, right, no psychopaths can be employed as CEOs, right, and run companies, no drug addicts can, no, you know, people who have other issues can, then I'm down for that. But, you know, I remember there was this very, very, very prominent company called The Firm. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, was led by someone who was very questionable in all these ways, but somehow still managed to sign the world's most prominent artists. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I mean, I'm down for whatever the rules are.
You know, we have separate rules. You know, the rules are different.
Let's just make them even. I'm not down for separate rules. I'm down for all the rules that apply to all the people. You know, I had somebody say to me recently, and they thought it was funny, but it's really, this stuff happens. And they thought it was funny. We were on a conference call, and you know how you're getting on a call and sometimes two people are on and waiting for the third person, right? So two people were on the call and they're waiting for the third person to get on. I was the third person. The other two people were on the call. They were not Black. And one person who I worked with said to the other person, oh, we're waiting on Nikita, right? Mm-hmm. And the person was like, oh, okay, yeah, no problem. And the person who worked with me said, yeah, you know, she'll just come on in her own time. You know, that Nikita is very arrogant and needs to be brought down the size. And was joking, said it in a joking manner, right? Yeah. Meanwhile, this is the person who worked with me, they're on the phone with someone from a major brand that they could have never gotten on the phone, that I got the person on the phone. The reason I was late is because I'm the one who set up the call, and I was trying to disconnect something on the line so that I could be able to join the call, right? It was something going on with the link. And so I'm like, oh, okay, find this funny. The whole reason we're on the phone is because of me connecting the dots. If this deal gets done, it'll be because it's my relationship. But yeah, I'm the one who's arrogant and needs to be brought down to size. Ha ha, joke, joke. Okay.
Wow. That is what, yeah, exactly what I'm talking about. Wow. That was,
but not you stay asking me, what do I think? What's my point of view? Do I have any ideas? You know, who do I know that I can introduce you to? You stay doing that, but I'm the one who's arrogant and needs to be brought down to size. Okay.
Yeah. So I think that, I mean, and I think any, you know, successful Black person, I mean, I imagine other people of color probably face this too. I don't know as if it's to the same extent of Black people, I'm not sure, but you know, that is a major issue, you know, when we have to basically, you know, dim our light, dim our emotions, dim our expression, because mm-hmm. other people will feel like, you know, we are being too arrogant, too confident, too like, oh my God, can, you know, so yeah, I think.
Yeah, and I think to me,
kind of like maybe the moral of the story, I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the point for me is, it's hard for me to respect anybody who doesn't understand basic vocabulary, right? Like, I think so many times people get confidence mixed up with arrogance, mm-hmm. right? I think so many times people get an actual expertise, a person who is an expert in their field. Like, so they're giving you their expertise. You get that mixed up with them just giving you their opinion, right? Like, they're just thinking how this might go. And so when they double down on their expertise because they know and you do not, then you label them as arrogant and as opposed to an expert, right? You'll label someone who has a level of experience that they're drawing from, you'll label them as arrogant as opposed to experienced. And you'll label someone who's just very passionate. Mm-hmm. You know, as a people, we are very passionate in just about everything we do, mm-hmm. right? Even somebody, you tell a joke, you know, it's a bunch of Black people, somebody gonna end up rolling on the floor. Somebody gonna fall out in their chair. Somebody gonna lay their head back and spit out their gum. I mean, right. It's just part right. of what makes us so phenomenal and fabulous and amazing, right. Is our passion. Spice of life, yeah. right? And so a lot of that has to come across, a lot of that comes across in our language. And a lot of it is expressed passionately, right? And so if you're going around the table and you're asking people what they think, then I think the onus should be on others at the table to understand what people from different cultures, how they communicate,
yeah,
right? And what they're actually saying versus, you know, the amount of volume that they have or the tenor or the tone.
And I think that's work that we all have to do, right? So I love what you said when, you know, the moral of this story, right? Navigating corporate America, sports and entertainment, when you are someone who has a big personality, who has a lot of ideas, who is very forward thinking, who's trying to bring something into the earth realm that only exists in your mind. And there's a level of frustration for people who just don't get it. Yeah, you do stand a chance of being marginalized and ostracized. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that what we're able to do by virtue of this conversation is give those people permission to be outright who they are.
Somebody agrees.
Somebody, yeah, girl, Bijou is going off because the Amazon man is here.
Oh, okay. I thought Bijou was like, that's right, mama. You tell him.
Right on, sister. Exactly. No, Bijou is so bougie that whatever label they put on her is probably well deserved.
Oh, my God. Wow. I would love to get feedback from people on today's episode of the Soul Chronicles. This was definitely, you know, a bit different than our typical episodes, but, you know, I feel like it's something that is a conversation that's very, very current and that needs to be had and discussed a lot more. So, Nikita, thank you so much for this conversation today. And we definitely welcome, you know, anyone's views. I'm sure, you know, there are going to be views on both sides of this discussion. But please share them with us on social media. We're at The Soul Chronicles on all platforms. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. So definitely, you know, share your comments on this. We'll be sharing some images. I'm definitely going to look for Damon Dash's CEO sneaker.
And that's what I want to see.
Yes. And and we'll share some other content as well. Thanks so much for joining us. Nikita, anything else you'd like to say?
Nope. I think I'm so happy that our audience is on this journey and on this ride with us as, you know, we're just discussing various topics that relate to trying to navigate these industries. And, you know, I hope today we give permission to people to be who they are. You saw what happened this week with Tabitha Brown, who, you know, exited her deal with the Food Network because of something they wanted to change about herself, her to change about herself. And she just vehemently denied and refused to do so. And just all the support that she's getting from the community saying that's right. You know, be unapologetically you in these spaces, no matter where you find yourself, and your audience is going to find you, you know, and your time is going to come. And, you know, wouldn't it be so great to be able to hold your head up high and to stick your chest out and look yourself in the mirror and be happy that you didn't undermine that person who's looking back. So, you know, cheers to being unapologetic this week.
That's right. Okay, thanks for joining us. Stay tuned to another episode. Make sure you follow, subscribe, like, comment, rate, all that. And we'll see you next time. Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
You're listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America.